no one was expecting from Mona because we really thought. Now, in these kind of presentations or conferences, when someone says, I don't have a technical talk, my heart only shrinks because it means he's going to preach about his software or his OS or whatever it is. Fear not, and not a preacher. So, and not a preach. Nor I came here to sell you any idea of anything, because I'm not a salesman. The reason I'm here is because I am an art user. That's like every one of you. Sole reason I came here. Okay. And because this is not a technical talk, I decided to call it Because We Can. Now, I concede this is a rather peculiar topic, but if you bear with me a few minutes, I'll tell you why it's called Because We Can. Probably you will discover that as we go. So, let's start from the beginning. My name is Ricardo Alves, and I am a software developer. In reality, I'm not. Actually, I am an electronics engineer turned code into a software developer. But I've been doing software development now for about 12, 14 years more or less. And most of it has been web-based and database-driven. And I love this one, web-based database-driven. And I'll tell you why. Because it fosters accountability. See, when you are developing for the web with a database backend, usually you have a DBA and a DBD. Now, the DBA, being database administrator, will make sure that the database is up and running and is performing well, and the DBD, or the database developer, has the responsibility to create all or to engineer all the back end of that database, tables and embedded scripting into the database so that it performs well and it doesn't bog down neither the own set of tables in here nor the database. But if it does, guess what? The guy over here, we'll call this guy over here accountable for it. And I am the guy over here. But I like it. I like it because it forces me to code at the highest standards I can. The other beautiful thing about web-based and database-driven is that web-based, you can bet your head on it. Eventually, it's just a matter of time, somebody's going to try to get and hack on your website through your web interface. And if you didn't do a good job when you created the web interface, somebody's going to get through. And then we're going to go doing the forensics of that software, and guess what? Everything points that it was your fault. It's a terrible feeling. But again, it forces good quality software, and I like the challenge. Now, you may actually ask yourselves, why does this guy put himself in that position? Well, because I can. Because I can make a difference with what I do if I do it well. And that gives me a sense, not only of ownership of what I do, but a sense of growing with the things I'm doing. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the story of Andropolis. But I'd like to share it with you. If you don't know the story, because in your study class, none of the teachers taught you about it, the link for the tree. It's a fantastic story. It's a true story. It did happen. It is historically recorded. And it goes more or less like this. There was, in the days of Rome, a slave. His name was Andropolis. And Andropolis had a master who was absolutely cruel. He would beat him up for no reason, feed him very little enough to keep him alive so he could be his servant, and never, ever, ever, for no reason, give him a break of any kind teacher would abuse me, because that's what slaves are for. Jesus abused me. One day, Androcles began to ponder about his predicament. And he said to himself, maybe I should escape. Maybe I should run away from this master and make a whole life better somewhere, far away from this man. And so, as this thought was building in his mind, another thought came in, and he said, on the other hand, if the master catches me trying to run away, he would surely take that away. And he was pondering on this thing for a while, until he came to the conclusion that running away might kill him, but so certainly would kill him is pain. So he decided to take his chances. And he ran away. Androcles had not many choices. He couldn't take the bus, he couldn't take an airplane, so he had to run through the desert. That was his only choice. So he went running through the desert throughout the day, hoping that his master, by the time his master figured he ran away and gathered a crew to go after him, he would be far enough that he wouldn't be caught. So he ran until his legs couldn't hold him anymore, and then he fell down. He was there for a while. And then, a couple of hours after being there, he could hear a little noise, like moaning or something. But he couldn't figure out exactly what it was. So he thought, maybe it's my master and his men. So he gotta carefully go over the tomb and peek, see what's in there. He crawled to the edge of the dune and looked over. And as he looked over, he found himself eye to eye with a desert lion. For a moment he thought, I'm dead. But the lion didn't move. Nor did he. So, he began to analyze the situation. What is going on here? What is he doing? And then he realized the lion had, in one of his paws, a very large cactus sliver. So, he figured he can really charge because he can't really move. In this predicament he was when he thought, well, dead for dead. Maybe I'll do something good. So he went, he reached forward and under the careful scrutiny of the lion that was perpetually looking at him extremely high, he took the sliver out of the lion's palm, and the lion didn't move at all. Next day in the morning, he opened his eyes. Very quiet. That's a good sign. He turns around to go, and he finds himself face to face again with the same lion driving his back. And he thought, was he waiting for me? What is this? He's going to eat me now. And as terrified as he was, he realized that the lion, once again, wasn't doing anything, but he was standing right in front of him. And then he dropped a rabbit and walked right. And he realized these just brought me food. This animal in the desert just not only spared my life, it's feeding me. As the story goes, Androcles lived in the desert for 2 years. But then again, living with a lion is not exactly a fun life, especially if you're in the desert. So after 2 years, he got really tired of living in the desert with a lion, and he decided to run away again when the lion would hunt him. And so when the lion went away, he ran from the lion. He lived about 3 or 4 months somewhere else, but the Roman soldiers found who he was and took him into custody again. Only this time, he was condemned to die because he escaped his master. He was sent to die in the Colosseum. So he had to go there and fight bare hand a wild animal until he died. I don't know what kind of fun that is, but this guy was really missing games or something. But his fate.
He pulled it through to 10 before there was the internet.
Yeah, that was definitely before the internet. So he goes there and he's set to die. And when he gets in there, they open the gates and he's standing in the middle of this big amphitheater, and this huge lion comes out. And then the lion stands in there for a few seconds, about 50 feet away from him, looking at him straight in the eye. Then the beast charged. And he charged full tilt until he was about 5 feet away from him, and then it stopped. There it struck. And then he lay down and approached and dropped it and began licking his feet. And the entire crowd in the Colosseum got up and said, "Mercy for the man, mercy for the man, get him out of there." So the emperor said, before he goes out, I want to talk to that man. So he called him the emperor used to have a seat right in front of the arena, right? So he called him over and said, "Come here, how do you do this incredible magic or whatever you did to the animal?" He said, it's not magic. And then he told the emperor the story I just told you. And the emperor said, "From today, you're a free man, and so is your lion." And the story goes that Androclus leave and roam the roads of Rome. That's a real time twister. Until the day he died, a free man. Now, probably you're asking yourselves right now, so what the heck has Androclus to do with Arch? Well, it actually has a lot to do with Arch. Because we live in a world of cause and effect. When we do something, something will happen as a natural consequence of that. That is what cause and effect means. When we, for instance, do good for people, any kind of good, it will return gratitude. People will feel naturally inspired to express gratitude. When we have the gratitude of people, it's not uncommon that gratitude will also inspire loyalty. Those are those two wonderful qualities. And because of what Arch has done for me, I would like to invite every one of you to join me to express gratitude, giving a good round of applause to all those developers and TAs. You've done a fantastic work. You know what you have done with your contributions, with your efforts? You built community. Now, community has its peculiarities too. I have done a lot of community work in my life. And it is interesting because I find certain patterns that repeat themselves. We build communities when we can build trust. If people find that they can trust you, they will be attracted to work with you. That's the principle number one, or what I call the number one pillar of community. The second pillar of community is that as we build trust, we feel the desire to do things together. So we find common goals, we find the things we have in common, and we begin to talk about it. And as we talk about the things we have in common, and because we trust each other, the third pillar is built. We begin to contribute. Sometimes in small ways, sometimes in larger ways, but everybody feels a necessity to contribute. I have a friend who happens to be from Dominica, and she was telling me once that they have this funny or this peculiar saying down there and it is, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think this because they are a small village, or a collection of small villages, and when there is a child in the village, everybody knows he belongs to that village. If a child misbehaves, any neighbor, without meaning his parents, will go there and correct that child. And if that child exposes himself to danger, any neighbor will go there and take that child out of that danger. And why do they do that? They do that because they are a community. They trust each other. They care for each other. This is one of the most important aspects of community. And sometimes the contributions we give away don't have to be the largest things. It was August 25th, 1991. There was an obscure programmer, nobody knew him. He was coding away. And he did write a piece of code, which he himself, in the email I'm going to show you when he sent it out that day, estimated that it was just a hobby and it won't be a big or professional thing like the GNU. He actually finished, after he explained what he was giving away, he finished by saying, and that's all I have. That programmer was Linus Torvalds, as you can see from his email, emailing from the University of Helsinki when he was a student. And we know the rest of the story. It doesn't have to be a big contribution. Because, just like the people of Dominica, everyone cares and everyone feels about it. That child will be the product, as they say, of the entire community. Whether the child is good or bad is the product of all of us. And I find that fascinating with open source because, in reality, that is what we are. We are here because we are a community. You may actually, if you take a second and you ask yourself, why are we here anyway? We're here because we can. Because we can make a difference. Together, we can make a difference. Together, we are a community. Independently, we are just an obscure programmer doing his thing somewhere else. But in here, together, we are a community. And as such, we can do it. The interesting thing also is that, as a community, we all can contribute to ARCH. And again, I've done a lot of community work in my days. So, I learned a few things when we work with community. Now, the first two things that and I've actually seen it even in messaging being posted in online in the other forums. The first thing when we talk about contribution, people will say, I don't code, sorry, I'm not a programmer, so I cannot contribute. You probably are familiar with that, those two lines. They're very common in the forums whenever contributing to ARCH work. Those are particular to ARCH, perhaps, but the next ones are particular to other, I would say, any other community out there when we need contribution. The next one is, what I have to give is not needed. That's a very common thing. I know I have skills, but you guys don't need one. Okay, that's very common. The next one, and you don't have time. Now this is an interesting one. I've heard this many times, again working with other people in different communities. And the interesting thing about I don't have time, it is a way not to feel guilty. I know I'm good at what I do, I know I could contribute, but if I don't have time, I don't have to feel guilty about it. So I don't contribute. But I don't feel guilty either because I don't have time. That's his excuse of the time. It works. Just kidding. Okay, so that is something we use to avoid feeling guilty about not contributing. The one that I find always the most interesting is I do not know what I can contribute. That, I think, is interesting. It is an excellent way to tell us that this person here wants to do something. He's eager, he's itching to do something. If we just point the person in the right direction. And this is something I would like to address in a few more minutes. Why would we get engaged in doing, or in devoting our time to help a bunch of people who don't even know? Well, I would say because I can. Because I can make a difference. One of the most interesting phrases that my wife's father used to say to his children was, whenever he came to dad, he said, "Dad, you know, I have a problem and I have a complaint, blah, blah, blah." And he would listen to what the kid would have to say all the way. And when they finished, his sentence, 9 out of 10, was, "Okay, I heard it. How are you going to make a difference now?" And I think that is an excellent thing to keep in mind. Because in the midst of challenge lies opportunity. And so, I think we can all contribute in different ways. And let me run a few ways. Writing skills. Writing, the ability to write is a gift. When I grew up in another language, as my accent sails out. And in that language, I was extremely fluent. And oftentimes, they would ask me, and I actually served for a number of years as a police officer. And when there was conflict, they would call me as a police officer to resolve it, because I was extremely fluent with the language, and I could calm down the situation and soothe everybody's interest and find out middle ground so we wouldn't end up fighting each other. And that is a gift. Writing skills are a gift. I can do that in English, but many of you can, because that's your first language. And if you don't know code, then you know how to write. Well, there is the wiki. There is, and somebody would say, "Well, the wiki is already written." Yeah, but some parts of it, have you tried to read it? It sucks a million. Okay, so trying to follow that wiki sometimes is more confusing than investigating on your own. So if you can write, rewrite what is not well written. Make it right. There are tutorials that can be written. There are other aspects that involve writing that you can use, if that's one of your gifts, to contribute. Small amount of time. That's what I did for the longest time in Arch. When I came to Arch, I didn't know what I was going to contribute. Everybody seemed to be far ahead of the pack in regard to me. So I thought, well, what can I do that I can contribute to this community? And so I pointed my RSS to the Arch Linux RSS. And every day, I would go for 20 minutes and search the postings in there and find those where I could help. And it would answer questions or try to help someone through a problem. So small contribution, I concede to that. But you know what? On doing that, I learned so much about Arch and to my own benefit that actually, I think in the long run, when you help others, you're just helping yourself. You are growing not only professionally, but only as a people. Money. Most community-driven organizations don't like to get there because it sounds like now we're not open source or free.